Rabbi Feldman on Shofros.
Hearing of the shofar. So to try to understand a little bit what's going on there, and to explore a little bit what we see from the nature of the mitzvah from this discussion. So the Rosh assumes that the mitzvah is about, the question of the bracha is about what is the mitzvah? It's a simple, straightforward explanation that there's a debate as to what are we really looking at when it comes to shofar. Is the mitzvah, like apparently Rabbeinu Tam understands, to blow the shofar? And then we have to understand, well, what about the fact that the vast majority of us do not blow the shofar? We usually only have one person blowing the shofar per minyan. So apparently that will happen through shlichus, who's an appointee of the community, and he blows the shofar on everyone else's behalf, but that's the mitzvah, to blow the shofar. While the other Rishonim apparently hold that no, the mitzvah is not in the blowing at all, but the mitzvah is in hearing the shofar. So therefore, we don't have to appoint any representatives. All of us who are in the room at the time are fulfilling the mitzvah directly, and we have one individual blowing the shofar in order to make it possible for us to do that. So the question is, that act of blowing the shofar, how do we understand that? What exactly, you're so devoted to providing shofar blowing, so what exactly is the mitzvah of the one blowing the shofar? Who exactly is blowing the shofar? What exactly are they accomplishing? What exactly are they doing? Because if we're going to say that the mitzvah is hearing, so then maybe we shouldn't care at all who does the shofar blowing directly. I used to have, I don't have it on my phone now, one of my older phones, I used to have a shofar app that creates different, you could push one button, made a trua, one button made a tkia, one button made a shvara.
So,
sorry?
You have to push 100 buttons.
Yeah, I had to keep going like that. So, assuming you could work around the untif issues, so then let's have an app do it. Let's have an app that's going to blow the shofar. We shouldn't really care if the mitzvah is to hear the shofar, then we shouldn't really care who does the tkia shofar. It could be a computer blowing the shofar. You'll have the same mitzvah. But we know that that's not the din. The Mishnah tells us that we do care who blows the shofar. There can't be somebody who's exempt from all mitzvahs. It can't be a chayre shota or a katan. Nor can it be somebody who's exempt from mitzvah sasesha as man grama, an isha or an eved, who's not obligated in time-bound mitzvahs, and therefore not obligated in shofar, also can't be the one blowing the shofar for the congregation. So the question is, why? Why do we care? If the whole mitzvah is not in the shofar blowing, it's in the shofar listening to, so then what difference does it make? Let anyone blow the shofar. So this is a question that many struggled with, and we'll try to explore, time permitting, six approaches to that question. What exactly is the nature of the mitzvah of blowing the shofar? Or is it a mitzvah? What exactly is the category we're going to use for shofar blowing? So out of the six approaches, the first one we've already alluded to, that's the view of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam's view is that was the mitzvah. So if that's the mitzvah, so then we understand why it would be that we care who blows the shofar. But if we assume that the majority view is like the Rambam, it's like the Bahag, it's like the Rush, that the mitzvah is hearing the shofar, so then the question comes back, why do we care who blows the shofar? So this was addressed by the Shai Gisaryeh and many others. And the Shai Gisaryeh explains that, yes, it's true, the mitzvah is hearing, but hearing what? It's the rest of the sentence. What is it that we have to hear? So we know already that it has to be a shofar, and that already would have been the answer to my shofar app, that even if it made identical sounds, the sounds aren't coming from a shofar, so we already would have understood that's not really good enough. You have to have a more elaborate shofar app that is connected to an actual shofar and is somehow directing air through it. I'm sure it's not far off, but you'd have to have a more elaborate app. But maybe there's even more to the sentence, that not only is it that you have to hear a shofar, but you have to hear a kol shel chiyuv. That's the language you find in some of the achronim, a sound of chiyuv, or a kol shel mitzvah, some of them phrase it that way, that the sound doesn't just have to be a sound of a shofar, but it has to be a sound of a shofar that is motivated by the mitzvah. And that's the requirement. It's interesting that one could perhaps try to draw a parallel to sukkah, and you find that the parallel doesn't really work. And when it comes to sukkah, so there we understand the mitzvah is sitting in the sukkah, is living in the sukkah, and the mitzvah isn't actually building the sukkah. Whether building the sukkah is a mitzvah on any level is something maybe we'll have a minute or two to address. And when it comes to the building of the sukkah, so the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sukkah that anyone can build a sukkah. There are no requirements at all as to who builds the sukkah. So why should it be different? How come when it comes to sukkah and shofar, there's this distinction that both of them, the mitzvah is in the next stage, the hearing or the leading, and in one case we care who blows the shofar, and in the other case we don't care who builds the sukkahs. So once in a sefer, it's a Talmud Chacham named Rav Shlomo Zalman Shmaya, who's written a few beautiful svarim on topics in halacha, and he suggests that the difference is that when you build a sukkah, so then you can walk away and the sukkah will still stand. So when somebody sits in a sukkah, that sukkah no longer is characterized by how it was made. But when you're listening to a shofar, the sound is only going to be there if the one blowing the shofar is continuing to blow it. So therefore, the sound of the shofar always carries the identity of the one who's generating it. So therefore, perhaps that has to be done by somebody who's obligated. And this could explain a difficult statement in the Torah. The Torah talks about the Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin. And what's a Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin? Somebody who is half slave, half free, which is a very strange situation. The Gemara says it was a slave who was owned by two masters. One set him free, the other one didn't. The Gemara says that that situation, even in the time when there were Avadim, never was really allowed to continue, because such a person wouldn't really be able to marry anyone. So the Gemara says we would compel the other owner to release him also, so he wouldn't remain in this limbo state of Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin. So what's the significance of Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin? Basically, he's nafkamina man. That he exists only if you want to come up with a hypothetical in order to test the theory. So Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, somebody who's half obligated in mitzvos and half not obligated in mitzvahs, he exists only for that purpose. He's the Minchas Chinuch superhero. So the Minchas Chinuch composed all the hypothetical questions, so the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin exists for this. So it says in the Torah that the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, half of him is not obligated in the mitzvah of shofar. The other half is. So because of his half obligation, he should listen to the shofar. But he can't blow on behalf of the congregation, because he's not really fully obligated. Not only that, says the Torah, but he can't blow shofar for himself either. So that's a strange situation, because normally you can always do a mitzvah at least on behalf of yourself. It's a question if you can do it on behalf of others, but at least on behalf of yourself you should always be able to. In fact, it's really a problem to say the other way. It's a problem to say that there's ever a mitzvah that you can only do through someone else. Because we normally have a principle, let's say if we're talking about shlichus here, normally the rule is that kol man di'ihu lo matzi avid, shlichus lo matzi mashbe. That if you can't do the mitzvah directly, then it's also not possible to do it through a shliach. So to say there's a mitzvah that you davka need someone else to do on your behalf is a very unusual situation. So some of the later svarim explain that it's because of this unique aspect of shofar, that here the chatzi avid, chatzi ben chorin, half of him needs to hear the shofar. But they need to hear a sound that's generated by somebody who's obligated. So since he's not fully obligated, he can't generate the sound that he needs to hear. It's a strange kind of situation, but apparently that's how we could understand this language in the Torah. And in fact, some of the commentaries wonder that how come when it gets to Hilchos Megillah, you don't find the parallel language. In Hilchos Purim, the Torah says that a Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin can't read the Megillah for the congregation. And it doesn't say there that he can't read for himself. Apparently it sounds like he can read for himself. So some of the commentaries say, well, he already pointed that detail out in shofar, he didn't have to repeat it here. But others shake their heads at that and say, no, there's a difference between shofar and Megillah. Then when it comes to Megillah, the mitzvah is to read the Megillah. So at least he can read it for himself. Maybe not on behalf of others, but at least he can perform the mitzvah himself, he's actually reading the Megillah, that's enough. But when it comes to shofar, the mitzvah is to hear the shofar, and he has to hear a kol shochiv, and that he's not able to generate.
The problem I have with that all is, Megillah, Nashim and Avadim have a chiv. kli, it just might be the same level.
Okay, well, the more so.
Okay, yeah. It's,
so how would that help? Is that's another reason why he can read for himself? I mean,
I don't need the whole business with the.
I mean, maybe you want to say that if Shofar was fully comparable, except it would still have to be on the same level, right? So the half of it that's the chatzi eved, it's still not going to work because this half of it is the chatzi eved is not going to be able to read on the level for the chatzi eved. Sorry, he's only going to hear. Right, he'll read the first five prakim. This is not going to. Yeah. It's still not going to work. So it's an interesting distinction between the two, but it's still not going to work. So, she should be, yeah, she can vote for herself because she's obligated on the same level as herself. So it's only the Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Menchorer, and again, who only exists to create nafkaminas, who only exists to create hypothetical scenarios, who has this quandary of living in the twilight zone that he needs to obligated to hear a shofar, but cannot generate the sound that meets the same level of obligation that he has. It's
maybe
a unique situation. I could hear where this is coming from. That maybe you would say that it's not called a kol shlochiyu. I think it's considered to be. Although I mean, it's not an impossible type of chumrah to suggest. Yeah, well, that's the other way around. Actually, one should be motzi herself from Abdallah, and it can't be motzi with somebody else. That the problem is, since it's a suffix, whether or not women are obligated in Abdallah. So then, if say the man has heard Abdallah already. So normally, to be yotzei a mitzvah twice, to do a mitzvah twice, you need to do it on behalf of somebody who is obligated. So if we're not sure if the woman who's listening to Havdalah is also obligated, so that might not be enough of a basis for him to say Havdalah twice. That's where it comes from. So she dafka can make Havdalah for herself. The question is...
But there's some people who say women should always hear from the man.
So I think it's really the other way around. The truth is the suffix anyway, so... There is that advantage, but if a man's already heard Havdalah, so then it's got other elements to it. But in any event, so I mean it's true that it's a suffix that also contributes to it from the other end. In any event, so what you see here is another unique aspect of shofar, that even the one who's blowing the shofar, whoever that is not fulfilling the mitzvah through blowing the shofar. Now, the one who's blowing the shofar is fulfilling the mitzvah through hearing the shofar, even though he's the one himself who's blowing it. And that's interesting just philosophically. Why should that be true? Why is this mitzvah done this way, that the mitzvah is always fulfilled on the hearing end, even if you happen to be blowing the shofar directly? So Rabbi Ganak discusses this in his Sefer Gan Shoshanim, where he quotes an idea that perhaps this is connected to one of the most famous lines in the Rambam. Now it's Elul and almost Rosh Hashanah, so this is one of the most quoted lines in the Rambam, which you're already anticipating. And if the Rambam says that Tkiyah Shofar, that Afal Pish Gzeres HaMelech, even though it's just a din min haTorah, but Remez Yeshbo, that there is a theme to it, there is an allusion to it. And what is that theme? That theme is, it's an alarm clock. Uru yishen in mishen oschem, that you should wake up from your sleep, from your slumber. You should move out of the pressures of all the materialism. So that idea, if the shofar is supposed to hit you as an alarm clock, so then maybe it makes sense that even the one blowing the shofar is not fulfilling the mitzvah that way, but rather he's fulfilling the mitzvah through the fact that he hears the shofar. And that's the location of the mitzvah. So basically, this would be our second approach. The first approach, again, is that the tekiah is the mitzvah. The second approach is the shmiah is the mitzvah. But the tekiah has to be from a bar chiyuva in order to be a kol shel chiyuv. This last point, that the mitzvah is fulfilled through the hearing, even for the one blowing the shofar, is highlighted by the Rush. The Rush, who sides with the view that the mitzvah is in the shmiah, so he makes this point also by noting a Mishnah. There's a Mishnah which is very significant b'halacha because it's quoted in a lot of different contexts. It's less well-known context. As we know, we have an expression in English. We say, this isn't going to make or break things. So that expression doesn't always get full credit. That's from the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah says that when there was the war with Amalek, so Moshe's hands were lifted up to heaven, and that's when they did better. And when his hands were down, and they weren't doing so well. So the Mishnah says, "V'chiyado shel Moshe, osos mochama, shovros mochama." What? It makes or breaks the war? So that's where the expression comes from, osos or shovros. So in that same Mishnah, there's another din, which is quoted a lot in halachic contexts for a lot of different reasons, that there the Mishnah says that hatakeo l'tol chabor, if somebody blows a shofar when they are standing inside of a pit, so then the question of whether they are yotze in the mitzvah of shofar is going to depend. What do they hear? Do they hear the sound of the shofar itself? Or do they hear kol havara, which you normally translate as an echo? If they hear the echo, then they're not yotze. And if they hear the shofar itself, then they are yotze. So this Mishnah is very, very influential to halacha, because it is the basis for the position, which is a discussion back and forth, the assumption that one does not fulfill mitzvos of hearing things through microphones or through telephones or through the radio is based on this Mishnah. Because what the Mishnah sounds like it's saying is that even if you have a sound that's perfectly recreated, if that's not the original sound, then that's not going to be effective for the mitzvah. So the assumption is that a microphone, for example, takes the sound and recreates it in a louder version, and it's not the original sound. So therefore, it should be comparable to what the Mishnah says. It's not going to be effective. Happens to be there's a big debate about this. This is the pretty much the mainstream position nowadays, that this Mishnah tells us that microphones and the like are not effective. Not everyone agreed with this. Rav Shlomo Zalman, who was particularly focused on issues of electricity, when it comes to Shabbos, he had very lenient positions about electricity on Shabbos. But on this issue, the issue of electricity for mitzvot, he says anyone who understands at all what's going on will know that the microphone is not the original sound and it doesn't have any connection to the sound that you need in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Others weren't so sure. The Chazon Ish wasn't so sure. The Chazon Ish writes that maybe it's always like that. When you talk now, so you move the air and the air eventually gets to your eardrums, so maybe again the sound is being constantly sighed. Not exactly, but... Sorry?
I'm surprised that he would know from physics.
Oh, he said something along those lines, that how do we know that it's always isn't always the case? That there's such a fundamental difference between how we hear converted sound in normal conversation and how a microphone converts it. Maybe it's not so different. But this position wasn't really accepted nowadays, although he mentioned Havdalah, you hear it from someone else. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he talks about listening to Havdalah over the phone, and he thinks it's at least worth a try. So not everyone was always so convinced that it doesn't work, but again, the more common position nowadays is to assume that microphones and telephones are not effective in conveying the sounds of things like this from mitzvos, and that's based on this mission. That's based on this idea that if you hear the sounds of the echo, you're not yotze.
Hi. So what did Rav Moshe say about Havdalah over phone?
So Rav Moshe talks about a woman who wants to hear Havdalah from, say, her son living somewhere else, so she wants to listen over the phone. So Rav Moshe thought it was at least worth a try. In other words, he wasn't so sure that you're not yotze the mitzvah over the telephone. He thought there was nothing to lose by listening to the mitzvah over the telephone. I think he was sure about it. If you remember his language exactly, I don't think he was sure that it's good, but he didn't think that it was for sure no good. But nowadays, the attitude is more that it's not effective. You know, over the phone or over a microphone is not actually actual sound. Hi. So hearing aids are a little more complicated. I think they work a little bit different way. Sorry? Okay, that was a joke. See, the point is, though, when it comes to a hearing aid, is that, similar to what Rav Moshe writes, is that it definitely doesn't hurt, because if you can't hear without it, so then your only option is to hear through the hearing aid. And since there's a good possibility that maybe that does work, like Chazon Ish and others, so it's definitely better than nothing. So if you can hear the shofar without the hearing aid, then there's nothing to lose. If you can hear the shofar without the hearing aid, then it might be worth, if it's possible, to do it without. But if there's no other in-between option, then it's probably better than nothing. Hi.
With regards to how dull of emotion said there was woman to eat and everything,
I believe so. I think that's what he writes. I have to look at it again. But if I remember his language was that it's worth a try, especially because it's a combination of sphagnum to begin with. This comes up in a lot of areas. I'm just mentioning this tangentially because it's interesting to note this Mishnah has the significance. And just while we're mentioning that tangentially, question about that?
Just Machlokas, Shlomo Zalman, Chazon Ish, very much hits right into the point of the origin of the sound.
Yeah, 100%.
You're hearing the same thing. But if it's a.
Oh, totally. It's explicitly about that.
The audio.
Yeah, no, that's explicitly about that. That's what Shlomo Zalman said. He did his physics research, and he's sure that it's completely different. And Chazanish was a little bit less sure that, even he acknowledged that difference, but he says he's not sure that that's so different from how we hear things normally, and maybe in a Hanami
that's all I'm saying. It sounds like they're focusing precisely on, do you need a Bar Chiyuv to generate the coal?
Or does the generation break when it goes through something else? Clearly you needed to be generated originally from a Bar Chiyuv, but the question is, can that still be considered to keep its identity once it goes through the microphone or goes through the phone? So there's a lot to say about this. I'm just mentioning it tangentially. But just if one wants to think about how it connects to this Mishnah, so those who disagree, those who didn't think the Mishnah necessarily disqualifies all microphones, so there are two additional interpretations one could have. First of all, the assumption that we're making here is that the Kol Havara the Mishnah is talking about is an identical reproduction of the sound. Maybe it wasn't identical. Maybe the Mishnah was talking about a distorted sound. So maybe the Mishnah means that if you hear the sound purely, that's one thing. If you hear it distorted through the echo, that's a problem. And that maybe if you had a microphone or something that would make the sound essentially identical, maybe it's not comparable to the Mishnah. Also, parenthetically, there are those who assume this Mishnah is a detail specifically in shofar, which would also be understandable if we say shofar is particularly about hearing a certain call, and that maybe we wouldn't extend this to Havdalah or Megillah or other mitzvahs. So there's a lot to say about this, just mentioning it tangentially because the Mishnah comes up here. So the Rosh says, though, whatever this says, the Rosh says someday they'll talk about microphones based on this, but for now what I'm interested in is that you see from this Mishnah that, again, the mitzvah happens in the Shmiah because that's apparently a crucial detail. Even the one we're talking about, the person blowing the shofar himself, and still, he might not be Yotzeh if he's not hearing his own sound coming from the shofar itself. So in this context, there is another possible explanation of what's going on here in terms of what is Tekiah and what is Shmiah. This is something that Rav Shechter quotes from Rav Soloveitchik in the Sefer Eretz HaTzvi as a lengthy explanation, where maybe you could say a little bit differently than the Rosh said. And when the Rosh said that the machlokas about the bracha is the question of, is the mitzvah tekiah or shmiah, maybe we could say differently. Maybe we could say that everyone agrees that tekiah and shmiah are both a part of the mitzvah. And the question is, how do we understand their relationship? That sometimes we have mitzvahs that are split into two. That most mitzvahs, you perform the mitzvah, and you fulfill the mitzvah at the same time. So you pick up a lulav, you fulfill the mitzvah of lulav. It's all one package deal. You eat matzah, you fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. But occasionally there are mitzvahs that are split. That you perform an action, that's the Maisa HaMitzvah. And the fulfillment of the mitzvah happens somewhere else. That's the Kiyum HaMitzvah. So maybe we could say that when it comes to shofar, there's two halves. The blowing of the shofar is the Maisa HaMitzvah. And the hearing of the shofar, that's the Kiyum HaMitzvah. And maybe everyone could agree to that structure. And the reason there's a machlokas is the question of, what does a bracha address? Do you make a bracha on a Maisa mitzvah? Or do you make a bracha on a Kiyum mitzvah? This comes up in a few other contexts. For example, Sfiras HaOmer. There's always a question, is Sfiras HaOmer one mitzvah or is it 49 mitzvahs? So sometimes it's invoked, well, it's got to be 49 mitzvahs because we make 49 brachas. Doesn't that suggest that it's 49 mitzvahs? So the response might be, maybe not. Maybe brachas don't correlate to mitzvah fulfillment. Maybe brachos correlate to actions of mitzvahs. So maybe if we have 49 recitations, even if it's all one mitzvah, maybe that justifies 49 brachos. So to here, maybe the Rishonim are just arguing about how the bracha should target itself, but not about how the mitzvah itself is structured. So maybe when it comes to shofar, we have two halves. The blowing is the tkias, is the maisa mitzvah, and the shmiasa shofar, that is the kiyumah. So what difference does that make besides the bracha? So it has a couple of differences, as he discusses there. So they all revolve around the question of, is the shofar the chavtzeh shal mitzvah? That essentially, if we're saying that blowing the shofar is the actual mitzvah, so then the shofar is the chavtzeh shal mitzvah. But if the kiyum comes from hearing it, So then the Kiyum HaMitzvah is actually from the sound, not from the shofar. So how would that affect things? Well, a couple of things might be affected. For example, does a shofar have the status of Asur Bahanah for anything else? Do we, say a shofar is a Chafetz Shel Mitzvah dedicated to the mitzvah? Or do we say it's just a means to an end? The sound is really the Chafetz Shel Mitzvah. The shofar itself is not. Or, another example, do we say that there's an issue that one should touch the shofar directly? So, for example, when it comes to Luv and Esrog, you're not supposed to have something interrupting a chatzitza between the hand and the Luv and Esrog, because the mitzvah is supposed to be held directly. So when it comes to the shofar, is there such a din? So the Mishnah says that if you have a gold-plated shofar, that's a problem. So some of the Rishonim understand the problem is that the gold plating distorts the sound. But the Ramban writes that the issue is it's a chatzitza, that the gold is going to come in between your mouth and the shofar. So who cares? So apparently he's assuming that the shofar itself is the chetz shel mitzvah, there's an inyan to touch it directly. And more significantly, this could perhaps address the question of mitzvah habavi aver. So first, as a major disclaimer, no one should think that there's any benefit at all to stealing a shofar to blow on Rosh Hashanah. That's wrong for so many reasons. But just from the very technical area of mitzvah habavi aveira, where a mitzvah is directly disqualified because the object is stolen, so it's a machlokas rishonim whether that extends to a stolen shofar. We know that a stolen lulav and esrog, for example, is no good. But what about a stolen shofar? So some of the rishonim, like Baal Sashri, quotes the view that a stolen shofar is also like a stolen esrog. It's no good. But the Rambam gets you off on a technicality. Because the Rambam says, if you blow a shofar that is stolen, so again, you're a bad boy for stealing a shofar in the first place, but it's not a technical exclusion because the mitzvah happens through the sound, and ein bekol din gezel. Essentially, the sound is ephemeral, and there's no way to steal sound. You can't have stolen sound. Now, this also, believe it or not, actually is quoted again in the modern context, the question of intellectual property and downloading music and the like, and whether it's possible to have the status of stolen by noise, by sound. Actually, this Rambam is, believe it or not, invoked in that context. You know, it sounds a little bit like a joke, but it does come up. But from a mitzvah b'avi aveira perspective, it seems to revolve around this question. Now, if you want to get very technical about it for me, of the time, so this is related to a statement of the Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch has a discussion by the mitzvah of Sukkah, where he discusses the fact that Gemara and Sukkah and Daf Tes, the Gemara says that from a pasuk that a stolen Sukkah is no good. So Tosfos asked the question over there, why do I need a pasuk for that? We know we have a concept of mitzvah of Avi Aveira. So a stolen Sukkah should be no good because of that. So says the Minchas Chinuch, and now we're kind of sending it through a brisker machine, to use brisker language. But essentially, the point of the Minchas Chinuch, his answer is as follows. That there's a difference between the mitzvah b'avi aveira and what that would do, and this psul ben haTorah of a stolen sukkah. If you stole a sukkah and sat in it on sukkahs, you would not get any mitzvah points for that. Mitzvah b'avi aveira, you can't score any points to Shemayim for the mitzvah that you stole in order to perform. So, okay, you'd be sitting in a sukkah, you wouldn't get any mitzvah for it. But it wouldn't be like you're sitting in your living room. It's not eating outside of a sukkah. You're still eating in a sukkah. It happens not to accomplish anything for your mitzvah bank account, because it's a mitzvah b'avi aveira. Sorry?
I'm the kind of essay, you know, over a lot.
Right, you're basically, it's not a bitul essay. It's not like you're eating inside the house. You're eating in a sukkah that's not doing anything for you mitzvah-wise. So comes the pasuk of sukkah gzula, and that says, no, it's mamish not a sukkah. It's nothing. It has no sukkah status whatsoever. So it's the same thing as eating in your living room. It's completely not a sukkah. It's been knocked out. So now to apply the brisker conversion machine to that. So what do you see from that, Minchas Chinuch? You see that what does mitzvah habavi aveira neutralize? It neutralizes a kiyum ha-mitzvah. You're not going to get any mitzvah points for what you're doing. But the mitzvah itself, the ma'isa mitzvah sitting in the sukkah, that's still there. It's just not giving you any kiyum. So if that's the idea, that mitzvah habavi aveira knocks out a kiyum but leaves the ma'isa standing, So then when it comes to shofar, if the kiyum is in the sound, so that's where the Rambam says you're off on a technicality, because there's no such thing as stolen sound. So that's where we could have talked about mitzvah babi avera, but it's not chayef, it's not practical, because down can't get stolen. So that all comes to the idea that the kiyum is in the sound, but the maisa is in the blowing of the shofar. So that'll be our third approach.
Hi. Is it different for the God of himself or the Acher?
So why then you get to the Shudra Rishos. Right, so we find that when it comes to Luvin Esra, in that whole discussion of who was the one who stole it, and he transferred, so that comes up. So presumably... Right, so if we had an actual sugya, then we would know whether there's a difference or not. But to apply it to Luvin Esra, it seems like it should make a difference, but the Rambam's going to say it doesn't matter anyway, because the whole concept doesn't apply. For the Hagal Sotri, those who say it would apply, then presumably it would make a difference who's the one actually holding on to it. So that would be our third approach. The fourth approach is very similar to the third approach, but we're going to give it its own slot here, because the third approach we just said in Brisker language. The fourth approach is very similar, but we're going to say it in the Sachachava language. It deserves its own slot. So the Sachachava Rebbe, the great Avnei Nezer, has a tshuva in which he explains it in a similar but different way, so we'll say that it justifies its own slot in our list. And says the Avnei Nezer that really the mitzvah of shofar really is the shmir. Right? That's what we understand the theme is, that you should hear the shofar, you should wake up from it. So clearly that is the mitzvah. But, he says, we have a rule that a mitzvah cannot be purely passive. So for example, we see mitzvah tayag, the 613th mitzvah, is the mitzvah of writing a sefer Torah. So when it comes to the mitzvah of writing a sefer Torah, the Rush and others explain that the mitzvah really is about having a sefer Torah. It's really there for Torah study purposes. So yes, the mitzvah is formulated as write one, but the real purpose of the mitzvah is to have one. And therefore, we find also that if one purchases a sefer Torah, he also accomplishes the mitzvah of ksiva sefer Torah, because at the end of the day, he has one. But if he inherits it, then that's not effective. They asked the Minchas Chinuch, what's the difference between inheriting and buying? It's the same result. If you buy something, you own it. And if you inherit something, you own it. 100% ownership both ways. So if buying it is enough, so why isn't inheriting enough? So the approach they have is that even though, yes, the purpose of the mitzvah really is having the Sefer Torah, but we don't have mitzvos that come just passively. There has to be some action connected to it. So writing it would be the ideal action. If you purchase it, that's also an action. But inheriting it usually comes without any action, and we certainly wouldn't recommend doing any action to inherit something. That would be a bigger mitzvah babi avera problem. So therefore, that's not going to be effective. So this principle, this idea that you have to actually do something for there to be a maisa mitzvah, he says that's what we apply to shofar also. That shofar, really the mitzvah is about, thematically, is really about shmiyat shofar. But we can't have just a passive thing be the mitzvah. So blowing the shofar is the maisa mitzvah. Now, still, 99.5% of us are still going to have the same passive relationship to it. We're still going to just be there in shul when the shofar is blown. But then we go back to our shlichus point, that the one who's blowing the shofar is acting on behalf of all of us. So one person in all the communities is doing that maisa, but still that's considered to be enough of a maisa that's good enough for all of us. So based on that, the Avnei Nezer wanted to explain a practice that we have, a mysterious practice, that the one blowing the shofar, when he makes the bracha on the shofar, the minig is to cover the shofar with the talis during the bracha, and then to take the talis off only after the bracha is finished. So says the Avnei Nezer, where does this come from? It comes from one of my other favorite subjects to talk about. We know we have a practice to cover up the challah Friday night. So why do we cover up the challah? So there are many interesting reasons in the Talmud Yerushalmi and the Rishonim, but the most interesting of the reasons is we cover up the challah because we don't want to embarrass the challah. Meaning that we had an option whether to make kiddush on the challah or on the wine, and we prefer to make kiddush on the wine. So we don't want the challah to feel bad, to be embarrassed, so we cover it up. It shouldn't see that we're making kiddush on the wine instead. So says the Avin Ezer, it's the same logic here. That really both the tekiah and the shmiah are a part of the mitzvah. And the tekiah is the maisa, that's the part of the mitzvah. And the shmiah is really what the mitzvah is all about. So if we have to choose, we'd rather put shmiah into the bracha, because that's what reflects what the real goal is. That's really what we're trying to do. We're here to hear the shofar, so we'd rather use shmiah for our bracha. But that means, as we said before, shmiah means the sound is the mitzvah, and tekiah means the shofar is the mitzvah, so we're covering up the shofar. It should know that its mitzvah, the tekiah, is passed over in favor of shmiah. That's how the Avin Ezer explains it. So the Avin Ezer was a great Hasidic posek, so probably the other greatest Hasidic posek, and is appreciated in non-Hasidic circles also, is the Minchas Elazar, the Munkacher Rabbi. The Munkacher Rabbi has a tshuva, where he's very upset about this tshuva, the Avin Ezer. He doesn't think it's correct at all, and he says that's not the explanation of why you cover up the shofar, and if that really was the explanation, you shouldn't cover up the shofar, you should cover up the shofar blower. The purpose is that it's Kabbalistic, it has something to do with Avram and the Akedah, and it's got nothing to do with this, and the Avin Ezer is totally wrong. So, could be, but that's there are dueling explanations as to what to do with the symbolism of covering up the shofar. Okay, so that's going to be our fourth approach. Again, it's not so different from the fifth approach, the third approach, but a different school of Avodah gets a different slot. The fifth approach is going to be very, very quick. It's very straightforward. But the Ksav Sofer writes in his Tshuvas, and also on the Sefer Yom Tshuva, takes this approach. Say maybe it's just a 50-50. They're both equal parts of the mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of tekiah, there's a mitzvah of shmiah. One we do directly, one we do through appointing one member of the congregation. And they both have equal halves of the mitzvah for whatever ramifications that has. The sixth approach, sorry?
Ramification.
Yes, ramification, exactly. So the sixth approach that we'll mention, and we'll just end with this, is the question of maybe you could give it a different perspective. That there is a chiddush of the Netziv. The Netziv, in his commentary to the Shiltas, talks about the mitzvah of sukkah. It's a little bit ahead. It's 2 weeks down. So in the Shilta Kuf Samach Tes, he talks about the question of what is the right way to understand the mitzvah, so to speak, of building a sukkah, as we alluded to before, that really it's not clear that there is a mitzvah of building a sukkah. We know there's a mitzvah of living in the sukkah on Sukkot. But build it itself, it's not clear if it is a mitzvah. There's a pretty extensive literature about it. What does it justify? What does it not justify? It's funny because we invoke this as our first mitzvah after Yom Kippur, and it's not even clear that it is a mitzvah. Maybe it's not a mitzvah in the first place. So what is the proper category? So the Netziv says he thinks he has a new category that could explain it. That when we do religiously motivated things, so some of them are mitzvos, and some of them are not mitzvahs themselves, but they're what we call a heksha mitzvah. A heksha mitzvah is something we do to prepare for a mitzvah. If it's necessary to get in place for the mitzvah to happen, it's a heksha mitzvah. So the assumption is that a heksha mitzvah is not a mitzvah. But the Netziv says not every heksha mitzvah is equal. But if you have a heksha mitzvah that's mentioned in Chumash itself, so that's called a heksha mitzvah Haksuva Bikra, that's written in the Torah. So even if we assume the Torah is not identifying it as a mitzvah per se, but as a preparation for mitzvah, that's enough reason that it has a quasi-mitzvah status. And he has some nafkaminas. He says, for example, you would still say mitzvah bo yosu v'shlucho, that it's still better if you can do it yourself rather than have someone else do it. So that's specifically he's talking in the context of sukkah. So sukkah, again, you can have somebody else build your sukkah, but it's still better if you to do it yourself. And also there's theoretically a bracha that could be made. The Talmud Yerushalmi has a bracha that it mentions in connection with building a sukkah. He says that idea of building of making a bracha reflects this quasi mitzvah status. So we could say that we could apply this to shofar as well. That maybe when it comes to shofar, even if we say the mitzvah is the shmiah, but it could be that Shkia still has a place as something significant, has a role as a Hechsher Mitzvah Ksuva Mikra, because the Truah, Yom Truah, the Truah is mentioned in the Torah, so maybe if it's not the Mitzvah, it's at least the Hechsher Mitzvah Ksuva Mikra, and has that extra status to it. Just to mention, Yeshiva is learning Kedushin this year, so some wanted to suggest that it's relevant there as well, because the major machlokas we've shown him, whether Kedushin itself is a Mitzvah, or do we say just Puravu is a Mitzvah? So some suggest the Rambam's language is a mitzvah. So some wanted to say that it's in this category also, that it's a mitzvah, it's something that's necessary for Puravu. So that's how the Rambam decided to call it a mitzvah, because it's a Heksha mitzvah, Ksuv Mukra, Kiikach Yishisha, maybe it's in that category as well. I think it's not really adequate for the Rambam. The Rambam probably has a lot more to it, but just while we're mentioning this, that's it. It comes up in that context as well. So just maybe we'll quickly review what we spoke about. So we mentioned this question of what is shofar, that we see a machlokas in the Rishonim as to what bracha to make. The Rabbeinu Tam saying the bracha should be about tekiah, and the Bahag and the Rush and the Rambam saying it should be about shmiah, and the Rush assumes the machlokas is what is the mitzvah. Is the mitzvah tekiah or shmiah? And the problem is, if we say the mitzvah is shmiah, then why are there any requirements at all for who does the tekiah? It shouldn't matter if the mitzvah is all in the shmiah. So we said we discuss six approaches. The first being Rabbeinu Tam, that is the mitzvah. But if you don't take his view, so then the other approaches start with the second approach, that the mitzvah is to shmiah, but shmiah of a kol shel chiyuv, so it has to be somebody who's obligated to generate that. And that could also explain why a chasiyah v'chatzim b'farin can't even blow shofar for himself. And that's why it's different shofar and Megillah, because Megillah the mitzvah is to read, so that he can do himself, but not shofar. We mentioned like an next citation in the explanation that the mitzvah is formulated this way because the theme of the mitzvah is an alarm clock. So an alarm clock, by its very nature, even if you're the one pushing the button, it affects you if you're listening to it, and that's why it's phrased that way. We also mentioned the distinction between sukkah and shofar, where sukkah, we don't have any requirements as to who builds the sukkah, and we mentioned the explanation of Shlomo Zalman Shmaya that the sukkah will stand on its own once it's built, but the sound of the shofar is going to disappear unless someone's constantly blowing the shofar, so therefore that's fundamentally different. Then we talked about the fact that the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah has a clear indication of the mitzvah of Shmiah, because the Mishnah says if you're blowing a shofar at a pit, if you hear the sound of the echo, that's no good. You have to hear the shofar itself. We took a little detour to discuss how that Mishnah has an impact on the laws of microphones and telephones and the like. And the question is, how can we understand this perhaps differently? So we mentioned also Rishalavetchik's explanation that everyone could agree to the structure, that there's a mitzvah of tekiah that is the maisa mitzvah, and shmi is the kima mitzvah, and the machlokas is just what you make a bracha on. You make a bracha on a maisa, or you make a bracha on a kiyum. And we talked about some ramifications, the question of whether the shofar is a chetza shel mitzvah or not, the question of whether there's an isser of benefiting from the shofar, the question of whether you have to touch the shofar directly, could that explain the Mishnah that says, go play the shofar is no good, and the question of mitzvah habavi aveira, the Rambam says, aim the shofar din gezel, and that's because it was called in Gezel, because the mitzvah was in the cold. All of Gav Sashri disagrees, and we mentioned the parallel to the Mechaschino, who says in the context of Sukkah that the Kiyum HaMitzvah is where Mitzvah Babi Avera has an impact, and that's why you need an extra pasuk to tell you Sukkah Gezula is no good, because it's not even a Maisa Mitzvah Sukkah once you have that pasuk. And then we mentioned the fourth approach, a very similar approach to Avnei Nezer, that the mitzvah is shmiah, but you can't have a mitzvah that's passive, and that's why you have to do something to own the Sefer Torah, even if the Kiyum HaMitzvah really is in only in the Sefer Torah. So too, we have to have somebody blow the shofar to have some kind of an action. And to explain that's why we cover the shofar during the bracha, because we could have made the bracha on Tekiah Shofar, but we prefer to make the bracha on Shmiah Shofar because it really goes to the theme. But that means that we're passing up the opportunity to make the bracha on the shofar, so we cover the shofar now to embarrass it. And the Menachas Elazar disagreed with that and said, no, that's not the reason at all, and it's Kabbalistic, and that doesn't work for him. And then we mentioned the Ksav Sofer and the Yom Truah, that it's 50-50, they're both part of the mitzvah. And finally we mentioned the Nitziv. The Nitziv has this Chiddush in the context of Sukkah, that something that prepares for a mitzvah and is mentioned in Chumash is called the Hechsher Mitzvah Haksuv Bekra, which is kind of a quasi mitzvah with nafkaminas such as Mitzvah Lo Yosu Mishlucho, when you make a bracha on it and the like. And maybe that's an appropriate category for the mitzvah Tekiah Shofar. It's not the mitzvah, but it's still a preparation for the mitzvah that is mentioned in Chumash, and therefore it has an extra status, and maybe that's what's going on. All right, I guess we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Wish you all a chesiva, chesima tova. which I was fortunately met to be other. He's soon be back here with a share of the Kol Kocho, and it should be a year of bracha, refuah, and mazel for everyone. Great things. It's all very roundabout. But literally translates into a day of blowing.
Does it have
blowing? Sure. You're translating call as sound. Sure, true as sound. So why don't we translate true as blowing of the
shofar?
Is that the blowing? You shouldn't think it's not a
quote.
Right. You shouldn't think it's disrespect to the blowing of the shofar. Very crucial.
Is that what you're translating for? Blowing? It's not.
I think it's.
It's not the sound. So,
at least implicitly, because you don't have the sound means somebody who heard the shofar.
It also means somebody who heard the shofar. Supposing we have one person who has a bottle of gate, he can't hear, and he's blowing. Would he be upset?
Yeah, it's a big question, but they can't hear it at all.
They can't hear it all.
Well, probably not. It's a special posting if you can hear a little bit.
Can't hear it all.
That touches on the hearing aid thing also.
Yeah.
I mean, you make a problem with something. Can't hear without hearing aid.
Affects that.
The gentleman upstairs.
The fair ones. Yeah, I hear them.
They can't hear it all.
And then the through the